Hey, it's Stephen Henderson. Coming up on the podcast, we're going to talk about housing here in the city of Detroit and an idea to give more people access to housing, the idea of small dollar mortgages. Detroit Future City CEO Anika Goss joins to talk about a new report that says this is one of the pieces that might make more housing available to more people. Anika, always great to have you here.
Thanks.
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Stephen.
So I want to start with something you have in this report. It says, without small dollar lending, many Detroiters may not have opportunities for home ownership at a price range that's affordable for their current incomes. I want to start with talking about why that's true, why we have this need, I guess, for small dollar mortgages.
Right. Yeah, so I think we've said before, and I really appreciate your preamble because we have worked really hard looking at the housing issue in Detroit. But 2/3 of Detroiters make $50,000 or less. And what we've also seen year over year is we are no longer a home ownership city, that about half of Detroiters are renting. And we're also seeing Detroiters renting, long-term renting as well, which is what I think people are really not paying attention to. And if you're a long-term renter, meaning you have been renting the same house for, especially a single-family home, for more than 5 years, you're really a homeowner, mm-hmm. right? And you should have a mortgage. So if you can pay rent consistently right. for that long. And so we've, you know, when the majority of the city is making less than $50,000 a year, there has to be other alternatives to create wealth. And wealth is just not attached to your wage at your job. But wealth is what you can also accumulate as a household over time.
Yeah, yeah. That idea of the long-term renter and transferring that long-term status, that stability to home ownership, you know, there are a lot of folks who don't necessarily believe that's possible, right? Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of people who think, well, they're renters for a reason, and maybe homeownership is not for them. But of course, the flip side of that is that wealth building and generation in this country still really is about what property you can own and build on and build equity in. Talk about how we get people from that stable renting situation mm-hmm. to that first home, and why we're having such a hard time in Detroit doing that.
Yeah. So I feel like we've spent so much time only focused on the individual household, the borrower, right, or the homeowner, mm-hmm. when in fact the system itself is not conducive to the diversity in homeowner borrowers. So the majority of financial institutions and major financial institutions do not want to make a loan for less than $100,000. Although many, what we've seen, and according to this new study, much of the majority, like the vast majority of home sales in Detroit were less than $100,000. mm-hmm. And so while some of this is, in fact, how can we move renters to homeowners, we actually have to have a system where there's enough available housing stock that's affordable, and there are enough places that are willing to lend for less than $100,000. Mm-hmm. to these kinds of borrowers that we're talking about. And there's just not enough of both of those things.
Yeah. When we talk about this issue with housing, I think we're talking about gaps, right? We're talking about, in some cases, gaps between what you need to put down on a mortgage to buy a house in some cases, We're talking about gaps in the valuation of a house that you might want to buy by a bank who might say, yeah, you want to pay $100,000 for that house, but we really only think it's worth $50,000. So yeah, you can't really buy that with a conventional mortgage. The small dollar mortgage idea you guys have is aimed at that second gap. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Well, it's less of an idea as much as we're trying to lift up what's happening in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. We're beginning to see more financial institutions, especially over the past few years, provide, whether it's a credit union or CDFIs like the Opportunity Resource Fund, or even other kinds of financial institutions that, like Rocket, for example, that are doing these mortgages, we're beginning to see an uptick in these small dollar mortgages. The purpose of the report was to really shine a light on that because it is an opportunity. Because what we've seen is Black home mortgage or Black home owners increase, which is a good thing.
Yes.
Right? And what we realize is that one of the reasons that we're seeing Black home ownership increase is because of these small mortgages. And so the more we can do of that, then the more we're able to stabilize some of these neighborhoods and the better space we can give between the renter and the homeowner in terms of moving towards back to that homeowner city.
Yeah. So if you had to lay out a scenario, I guess, for our listeners where these small dollar mortgages would make the most difference, what would that look like? What kind of families are we talking about? What kind of areas of the city would this work in?
So in the report, we looked at three neighborhoods that I think are pretty stereotypical of the city where we're seeing these mortgages happen. And these are places where the average homeowner, the median price, which is different than the average, but the median price was between $40,000 and $55,000. And these are places where neighborhood like St. Mary McCrary, mm-hmm. Fitzgerald neighborhood, and then the Denby neighborhood on the east side. And these are neighborhoods where the homes are fairly small, where they've been traditionally renter neighborhoods, where we're seeing more of an uptick in these small mortgages. And it's neighborhoods like these that I think probably get ignored, right? They're not, I mean, Fitzgerald's gotten a lot of attention because of Mary Grove mm-hmm. and the investment from the Kresge Foundation, but people don't even know where St. Mary McCrary mm-hmm. is, right? The only reason why I know, my great aunt used to live there. So, but it was a really, these are also something, Stephen, the way to think about it, these are neighborhoods that were the bedrock of home ownership for Detroit for years. These small cottage and ranch style homes. Mm-hmm. These are not the giant, mammoth homes in Boston Edison or the neighborhoods surrounding that. These are really, cottage neighborhoods that have been turned over to renters that were hit really hard during the foreclosure crisis mm-hmm. that are now being stabilized with this small mortgage. And I feel like that's just an example. There are neighborhoods like this all over the city.
Yeah. The idea of how we got here, I think, is always kind of important to keep emphasizing. When you and I were growing up here in Detroit, these were neighborhoods where families lived and owned.
Yeah.
In huge numbers. I mean, I knew people who lived in all of these neighborhoods when we were kids, Black families mm-hmm. who lived in these neighborhoods and owned their homes. We need to remind listeners of what happened. Why did that home ownership not translate as it has for many other communities into the kind of wealth that people have now, the kind of opportunity that people have now? You inherit your house from your parents, and that gives you a head start in life. Mm-hmm. Why did that not happen mm-hmm. in these places?
I mean, I think people really forget that the financial crisis was only a little over 10 years ago, and where entire blocks were emptied out due to foreclosure and then the tax foreclosure wave. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of damage that's been done. But we've come back in ways that I think people are really unexpected. And the impact of the loss of homeowners had a devastating effect on Detroiters.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we've said in other reports that, and this continues to impact housing choices, Black Detroiters will live anywhere in the city because they know the city mm-hmm. and feel comfortable mm-hmm. in the city, right?
Any neighborhood.
And we have to continue. So what it requires, Stephen, is for us to really think about neighborhoods holistically. So in order for people to choose middle-class Black Detroiters and people who are moving into the middle class to choose these same neighborhoods that we lived, where everybody owned when we were growing up, we also have to make investments in these neighborhoods to make these neighborhoods whole. Things like home repair, things like parks and other amenities, planting trees and gardens so these places are beautiful, access to commercial services so that it's easy to live in these neighborhoods, even if they're small, modest homes with small, modest mortgages. That's how you stabilize a neighborhood, because those neighborhoods were modest then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these weren't like hugely expensive homes then, but there was a much tighter community fabric in those communities.
Yeah, they were really gateway communities, right? The first home that a family my own would be in a place like that. You hang on to it for 20 or 30 years. It's worth more. You sell it and either pass that equity on to your children, or you buy a bigger home, maybe in the city or somewhere else. And that's an important part of sustainability in big cities. And that's what we lost when all of that crashed down.
That's right.
We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
This new year, LifeKit wants to help you succeed, because everyone needs a little help being human.
It can seem so overwhelming. You're not alone.
Who can I commit to being?
If you want to do something, then just do it. Just take that first step.
Great advice every week. Listen to Life Kit from NPR.
Anika, before we get to our listeners, I do want to talk about the lending side of this, because that's always really critical, but it's especially critical here in Detroit, and the history of lending in the city, problems we've had in the lending market. Talk about how all of that comes to bear on this question of small dollar mortgages. I mean, in simple terms, it seems like these would be easier mortgages for people to get. They're not as much money. And when you think of the other kind of lending that banks do, unsecured lending for credit cards that you can run up $15,000, $20,000 on, it seems incongruous that they might give people a hard time about $30,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 on a house. So talk about that lending environment and how it confounds this issue.
Yeah, that is, it's really interesting. And last year we produced a report called Buying In that analyzed the HMDA data and looked at lending in Detroit. And that was one of the things that led to this. And I should also say, for this report, we partnered with Data Driven Detroit, and this was made possible by the Black Wealth Data Center and Bloomberg Philanthropies. But interestingly enough, part of the reason we're not seeing lending in small dollar mortgages is because you can't really make money off of it, you know? Right. And so are the major financial institutions are not really, it's very difficult actually for them to make these kinds of mortgages. To our understanding, they call these mortgages special purpose credit programs, mm-hmm. right, where they keep these small mortgages on their books. And so there are programs that they have. So for the major banks, where that would allow for a small dollar mortgage. Credit unions and small CDFIs that do front-end mortgages mm-hmm. have been doing this for years, mm-hmm. and that's who you would go to if you needed a mortgage for $30,000 for a home. And so we're starting to see more of this. We're certainly seeing, and this is in the report, we're seeing the demand for it. Like the demand for these small dollar mortgage is much as 3 to 1 in terms of applicants to approved mortgages for these small dollar mortgages. And so there's definitely people want to try to do this. And so I do think that we have to figure out a way to make it easier for the banks for you know, my issue is that the way we've done small dollar financing or small dollar home ownership has happened in Detroit, but it's usually done with cash. Mm-hmm. In that space yeah. where there wasn't much of a market, you would just buy with cash a home.
Right.
Moving into that space where you get a mortgage, it's not only good for that person to build wealth over time, but it's good for the city to have that kind of that mortgage capital investment. There are still parts of the city where there are no mortgages at all.
Yep.
And that is problematic.
Right, because when you go to a bank and try to get a loan, one of the things they look at is every other house around the one that you're trying to buy.
Exactly.
And if they don't see other mortgages, they think that is associated with risk.
It's not underwritable. Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah. So that it's really, really important. It's something that the other issue that I want to bring up about the small dollar mortgage is I think one of the reasons this is also important is because by pushing these types of mortgages helps to increase the overall value of homeownership generally mm-hmm. in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And that has to be something that we want, the position that we want to take. What concerns me about Black home ownership increasing is that it's only increasing because of this increase in Black people owning homes that are $100,000 or less.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to see Black people win. I want us to have mortgages and financing homes that are much higher than that. And so if we don't increase the number of small dollar mortgages, we're not going to get to that $250,000 market yeah. or higher.
Right, right. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's start today with Lucy in LaSalle Gardens here in Detroit. Lucy, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Stephen. Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
And Anika, I know you from way back from Rose's Fine Food.
Hi.
So,
yeah, Lucy is a familiar face and
great.
Voice here on Detroit Today.
Yes, that's true. I'm a realtor now in the city, and I was just calling in because, you know, I think I've probably even called to say this before, but one of the things that is a big hurdle for a lot of people, I find buying in the city is still like the property taxes and the uncapping that happens a year mm-hmm. after you purchase, your mortgage payment goes up all of a sudden because you're usually, you know, you're buying at a higher price point than the home was previously sold for.
Mm-hmm.
And so the taxes are reassessed. So that's one thing that's been difficult. Another thing that I've found is, like, also in these kind of, like, lesser-known neighborhoods, like, I have a listing in Wildermere Park right now that has been really difficult to sell, and we're dropping it down to basically $100,000, and we started at, like, $130,000, is that, you know, it's across from an abandoned school. It's a really cool house.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great spot, and, you know, it's really centrally located in the city. You can get to anywhere, but people just keep turning it down because they're like, oh, this neighborhood is not good, you know? And it's like, well, that's not really, you're not seeing it, but, you know,
yeah.
Mostly sound of the city just still, like, not really getting its act together in the ways that we need it to.
Sure. Lucy, I really appreciate you calling in and making both of those points. You know, as a reference point, I guess, I will point back to the first home I bought in the city 30 years ago in Woodbridge in the mid-90s. There was an abandoned house that had been on fire across the street from mine. And the trouble we had with the lenders over that property was also pretty difficult, and also when we sold it, a lot of lenders were like, "What's going on there?" Now, you know, the truth is, we were so enamored with the house that I don't even remember seeing that abandoned house until somebody pointed it out to me. But it's still an issue in lots of neighborhoods here. What's around you and how that makes buyers feel, but also how that makes lenders feel.
Absolutely. Hi, Lucy. And that is you've made some really great points on both of those issues. And the tax issue, you might recall the land value tax policy that the Duggan administration was trying to really push. This was one of the reasons, right? This the idea of tax equity is a real challenge in the city, and we have to be able to address that from a policy level. I think, you know, people forget or don't realize that when you're being appraised for a loan or for insurance, vacant property, abandoned properties, the conditions of the other homes in your neighborhoods, abandoned lots, all of that goes into consideration and puts your personal loan at risk. And that makes it very, very difficult. And I think we've said that multiple times, that you have to be able to really think about what goes on in that neighborhood, and that it's so much more, which is how we started this conversation, so much more than that home buyer that might be working on their credit, that might be saving up money to get ready for that mortgage, only to find out that they can't buy their dream home because there's an abandoned school across the street, because there was there's a abandoned gas station on the corner. All of those things contribute to the value and your ability to obtain a mortgage.
Yeah. Again, Lucy, really appreciate the call and all of that info. Let's go next to Gene in Detroit. Gene, welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning, Stephen.
Hey.
Good morning, Anita. You're absolutely correct that the affordable housing in Detroit is from the existing homes that are already there. The cost of new construction is prohibitive. One of the best ways to advance that is to take advantage of the laws that are already on the books regarding nuisance abatement, repair to own, and basically a home repatriation, where you put the owner into the home through the ordinance, and you front load all your costs, not to acquisition, but to home repair.
Hmm.
That's where you want the activity, in a home repair loan that will bridge the gap between what the potential homeowner can do in their own sweat equity and what really needs to be done to make the home livable. Mm. And that will add value right then and there.
Hmm. Yeah. Gene, I really appreciate that point, this idea of the condition of the housing in Detroit. I mean, you guys have focused on that a little too at Detroit Future City. It does tie into the mortgage question, but it goes more to, I think, the sustainability of these communities, right? If you buy a home for not very much money, but it needs work and you can't get the money to do the work after you buy it, that also keeps the values low and prevents you from the kind of equity building that we're talking about.
Yeah, we definitely need a diverse set of financial tools in order to make this. I think that's really what both callers have described, is that there's not one tool for this in a neighborhood, right? We need multiple financial tools.
Absolutely.
In order to make these neighborhoods work.
Yeah. Gene, really appreciate the call. Let's go next to James in Detroit. James, what's on your mind?
Hi, Detroit. Hi, my friend Steven. Yes, I'm James, and I'm a former long-term resident of Detroit, and I've moved away, and I want to come back. I have a son, and he's a perfect fit for the community, and I am too, and we're just having difficulty. I had a lot of personal problems, and so I'm looking at getting a mortgage, trying to buy one of these very affordable homes in Detroit, fixing it up. I have some practical skills, graduated University of Detroit and architecture school, but I'm not practicing architecture now. I'm kind of retired. I taught for 20 years, and I'm finding, you know, it's not even worth applying for the mortgage because I know it's not going to go through. I really don't believe the banks are going to find a way to, you know, with all the barriers to give people back the homes that make them good homeowners again. Their profit motive is very high. And I know that the circumstances have to be really well explained. It takes a lot of time to explain why I want to flip houses in Detroit, why I want to bring Detroit back with the other good people who are investing in Detroit. Mm. And it's just a difficult thing. My credit score is like 550. There's a reason for that. I got it up to almost 700 at one point. Now it's going back down because I've got circumstances. My mother died. Mm. It's just, you know, my money's tied up in probate court and different things like that. And I don't look good on paper, so they're not going to lend me the money. I'm just afraid, you know, that the plans I have, which will be good for me and good for my friends in Detroit who are nearby me. Mm. You know, I'm so broke. I moved to Inkster, then I can't stay in Inkster. So then I moved to Irish Hills, and that's costing me money to travel. And it's just, you know, I'm all stressed out. And I'm a guy who's a potential good bet, because I paid mortgages for years. I lost $70,000 in a mortgage crisis. I got $100 for my home in Novi. Oh. So it's like, I want to invest in Detroit because I know it's stable, more stable than the suburbs, the way that the banks were treating us. And, you know, I'm not as ambitious. I don't want a $200 million home. I don't want a $200,000 home. I want a $30,000 home I can fix up. I've got skills in roofing. The banks will hire me as a roofer to put half a roof on a house. They pay me crap. And, you know, and I get away with living day by day that way.
Yeah, James, I really appreciate the call, and that I've issued. There's so many issues that he pointed out there that homeowners are dealing with kind of all over the place here in Detroit. James, really appreciate the call. Let's go next to Jillian in the North End. Jillian, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. I think you know it's Joanne.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, no problem. That's no problem. So my neighborhood still has burnt out buildings. You should see this one building the land bank wants to sell. It isn't even boarded up on the first block, and they don't even put land bank on the outside. It's RCH Realty selling, and they call it their marketing candidates. And I called about one house because I knew they wouldn't sell the side lot that my neighbor had been taking care of, and they said, Land Bank said, oh, well, we have a pending offer. I said, may I ask what it is? They said $25,000, but you need to have $25,050 cash for us to even consider it.
Wow.
So I'm bringing this up because there's still abandoned buildings or vacant buildings here. There's still burnt buildings. There's still mysterious fires. And then I'm wondering, where is the city coming up with this demand for all this expensive, like studio, one bedroom, mostly apartments, you know, this $1,000 stuff a month? I just don't get it. And so there is something to do with location, as the lady had discussed before. There were some communities, a kind of bedrock home ownership communities. But this was, too. I used to work in this neighborhood back in the 90s, and I returned to the city, and I'm horrified at how much has been destroyed. And I would argue that the destruction of so many of these historic homes, it did not stop the blight. It did not stop the crime. It sure did facilitate, you know, cost for some developers, it seems like. But I don't think we're trying hard enough to help people with the home ownership. I'm not a banker. I don't know the answer. But I just wanted to throw that in there. A lot of it has to do with location. And I think, you know, a lot of people's secretive plans that have not been revealed to us yet.
Again, the stories about what's going on in these neighborhoods and with individual properties and people trying to make a difference. As I said in the open, this is such a complicated problem, and there are so many different little problems that contribute to all of this. Sometimes I just kind of feel overwhelmed when I hear people talking about all of these things. You know, there's not a way to wave a wand, I guess, and take care of all of this at once.
It's not. And I, you know, I think with both callers, all of the, everyone who's called in, I think it's a real testament to the commitment to Detroit, right? That's really, overall, people want Detroit, their neighborhood, wherever they're living, they are invested more than any other city that I've worked in or lived in. People are invested in what happens in the neighborhoods where they are right now, whether they're renting or owning. They want their neighborhood to be great. And so it is a really heavy lift. It's a heavy commitment, and it's a heavy investment. It requires everyone to make this investment. And so I really appreciate everyone's individual story also, Stephen, because it's tough. You if you're choosing Detroit, you are making a choice.
Yeah.
You are making a choice to see the whole city great, right? That you don't have to.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Anika Goss, always great to have you here with us on Detroit Today. Congratulations on the new report, and thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much, Stephen. I really appreciate it.
Today's episode of Detroit Today was produced by Sam Corey and Nick Austin. Our technical director and engineer is Nate Bender. Our assistant producer is Maddie Boyer. Editing and mixing is by Connor Anderson. Our music is by Sam Bobian and Will Sessions. Our podcast manager is David Lyons, and our program director is Adam Fox. Detroit Today is a production of WDET Public Radio. If you love the conversations we have on Detroit Today, consider donating to WDET, the public radio station in Detroit that we call home. If you want to be a part of the conversation and call in, you can listen live every day on WDET.org or on the WDET mobile app. Or if you live in Southeast Michigan and still love listening to good old-fashioned radio like me, tune in to 101.9 FM.